You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Hello and welcome to episode 66 of the Manage Mental Podcast, a weekly discussion on hot topics in the music biz for the up-and-comers, the brand newbies, the beginners, and aspiring rock stars of tomorrow. This podcast is propelled by your input and feedback. So please rate and review and leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this show. I am your host, Mr. Blasco, and as always, I am joined by my good friend, the co-host from the other coast, Mr. Mike Mowry.
I mean, dude, by the time this episode airs, we will have hung out together for the first time in a really long time, right?
Yeah.
Welcome to Rockville, baby.
We will have rocked it out Florida style.
Episode 66, which is about as metal of an episode as we're going to get for a while.
Yeah, because we're a long way away from episode 666.
Dude, by the way, there's an attorney who we both know who will remain nameless, but I'm sure he's listening. So I'm on the phone with this guy, and he's talking about how much his rate is, right? And boy, I've heard of some high attorney rates, and this guy's is pretty high. But when he gives me the number, I'm like, dude, it's so close to 666. Why on earth wouldn't you just make that your hourly rate, right?
Right.
If you're a metal attorney, and you've got two sixes and a zero in your hourly rate, so why on earth wouldn't you just bump it up to six?
I agree. Was he down with it? Did he get a change?
Yeah, you know, I think he's got us. You know, the beautiful thing about what you and I do here as podcast hosts and managers that run our own companies is we could do that with one executive decision. He's probably got to, you know, he's probably got to go through like 16 different channels. So, we'll have to do a follow-up and see. You know what I'm saying?
Awesome. Yeah, man. In the last episode, we chatted about how to effectively submit your music to record labels. That was a really great episode, so check it out if you haven't already.
Oh, hold one second. Actually, I got a killer freaking demo sent to me. Whatever. A press pack in a VHS tape box with cool artwork, and inside Blasco was a cool little I'm looking at it now, it's on my desk, it's got a zip drive, so they took like foam, you know, like kind of that, you know, all the stuff that's probably in your like travel cases for your instruments. They carved out a little thing for a USB stick, it's in there. They put a Starbucks gift card and a poster and a personalized note, and the music ain't half bad either. I mean, that's a huge. We're going to have to go back and do episode
now check
65
it out.
Over again.
I got the same one.
Yes!
In mine, there was two cat toys.
See, dude? They've listened. They know. We've talked about this. We didn't do it in episode 65, but I have talked about it. You know, we've talked about it on this podcast or in other places, personalizing things. They know I like coffee. They know you like cats and therefore cat toys. Have you listened to it?
I haven't listened to it yet.
Dude, it's actually not bad. I've got some. We won't go into that. But anyways, go listen to our episode 65. And when you're done with that, just go make something really freaking cool and unique and send me in Blasco gifts.
Yeah. Today's episode is sponsored by our buddies at rockabilia.com. Go check them out for the awesomest collection of officially licensed band merch on the planet. Use our code PCJabberjaw and get 15% off your entire order.
Dude, I feel like this should be like Anecdotal Wednesday with Mike Mowry, because speaking of Rockabilia, I was talking to, there's this cool podcast about the history of the band Husker Du, great punk band from Minneapolis, and a friend turned me on to it, and so I was like, oh, I want to talk to the producer based in Minneapolis. Anyways, we start talking about other things in Minneapolis, or the greater Minnesota, you know, that region, which is where Rockabilia is based. So the guy said he hadn't heard of him, and I start launching into essentially our copy lines. I'm like, oh, it's 500,000 plus, you know, items of different genres. And and I'm like, can you tell that I've had to talk about this company? So my point is, Rockabilia is in Minnesota, as is the great producer, and we'll put the link in the show notes to this cool podcast on Husker Du. But really, Rockabilia takes care of us, so please go take care of them. Head on over to that site. They got pretty much anything and everything you could want. And supposedly, we're going to get a shirt or two soon, I believe, Blasco.
Nice.
Yep. So, PC Jabberjaw, 15% off.
This week, we take some questions from our loyal listeners. This is going to be killer, so let's get mental.
I've said too much.
So, Mike, it feels like we haven't done this in a while, and I've amassed a collection of questions from our loyal listeners. So, you know, what better way to dig into episode 66 than dig into some questions from our listeners, right?
Yeah, I was pumped when I saw this one pop in as the topic and then looked at the questions. I was like, okay, this is cool. It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, and, you know, once again, you know, we appreciate you guys writing in. We appreciate that you guys are listening and that we're inspiring you to follow up with questions. So keep them coming. AskBlasco@gmail.com. So,
and of course, please make sure that you rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and wherever and always and forever and always. This is why Blasco does these things, because he's got them written down. But Apple Podcasts, rate us and review us, and you might get a special shout out. But yes, yeah, keep the questions coming, because these are some good ones. I'm excited to get into them.
Cool. Question number one comes from our loyal listener, Corey. So my band just recently got offered a very great European tour. The catch is that it is a buy-on, and also we have to pay for the agency's services on top of that price, and also find our own transportation. Many others I have talked to have said the cost is not worth even the resume bump. By the time all is said and done, I'm sure this will cost around 15 to 20K, which we would have to put on credit cards. Would you advise doing something this drastic for a band's resume, or should we keep slugging it out on small DIY tours in the USA until we hopefully find tours that are bigger and not buy-ons?
Whew. I mean, these are so hard without some specifics, but that's okay. Generalities are well worth at least discussing. You know, we've talked about quote-unquote buy-ons, and you know, my take is they don't really move the needle in the way that they once did. So I would have to say that it's probably, you know, not worth it. But without knowing those specifics, part of me does still say, I don't know. Maybe it could be worth it. It just depends on those finer things. What's your overall take?
My opinion is that if you're buying on, right, if you're giving the band money, you should be able to be in a position of some type of negotiation. Nothing crazy, but I feel like if you're going like, hey, guys, like I'm writing you a check, there needs to be some contingencies here. Things along the lines of, we need to play at least an hour after Doors, right? Because if it's like, if you don't pay attention to that, you could be playing at Door, like when they open the door, you know, you could be playing 20 minutes after, and then no one's like, what's the point of buying onto a tour if you're not playing in front of anybody, you know? And then also too, you need to consider you are first of how many bands, right? If your buy-on gets you, say, first of three and you're playing an hour after Doors, that doesn't seem like a bad idea for me. But man, let's just say that they're trying to squeak you 30 minutes after Doors and you're first of five, I would really question how much you're going to go in debt for something like that. I would negotiate. I would have a contingency of the amount of merch items that you can, because look, if you're going into debt, the only way that you're going to offset this is with merch sales. So if they're going to give you only one merch item in some dingy dark corner of the venue somewhere or whatever, that's not going to be so helpful. So maybe you go to them and go, look, guys, on a contingency, like, throw us a few items so that we can try and make our money back, you know?
Yeah, I mean, great points. And, you know, the overall amount, I mean, this is what we talk about all the time on here. It's about investment, right? I mean, I was having a discussion with a band recently, and I may have mentioned this on a few podcast episodes because it's been an ongoing conversation, but we're now at the point where we're committing to a producer who I'm excited, you know, hopefully can take this band from what I think is a great amount of talent to really giving them a shot at, you know, digestible songs that can work, you know, for the masses. Now, that said, it's a significant cost. You know, we're talking almost $30,000, and the band was prepared to spend 15. So we're talking same numbers here in difference, right? Talking 15 to 20K in addition to what the band had already planned to spend. And not to sound like a total asshole, but at your phase in life and my phase in life, we realize that 15 to 20K, yes, it's still a significant amount of money. I'm not trying to trivialize that, but really, it's not. You know, when you go through life and you realize, especially when you're splitting it four or five ways, you're talking $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 each. Okay, put that on a credit card. It might not work, but it also might, right? So what's your tolerance for risk? Like Blasco's saying, I mean, these are crucial questions that have to be asked. If you're not negotiating things like when are we playing, how much merch can we sell, and you don't have any other, you know, things to that you're aligning in conjunction with this, new record, repress, whatever, then don't bother. But don't let the money itself scare you, because, you know, sometimes opportunities come with a price, and it's really about, are you prepared to put that money in and make the most of it, knowing that you've bet on yourselves?
I would also add that an opportunity like this, don't waste it on partying. Understand that this is an investment. The time of the tour is relatively limited. You know, it's going to be whatever it is, 3 weeks, 6 weeks. And you need to make the most of that couple hours a night. You need to be having people sign up for your mailing list, sign up for your socials, buying your merch. You need to be taking photos with people. You need to be in people's faces. You need to start to build that fan base. So use this as an opportunity to promote your band. Get out there, get in people's faces. Don't stay in the back and think that this is a way to just party with your bros. Like, this, a buy-on is not that. Like, this is a real opportunity to build your brand.
Absolutely. Very well said.
Question number two comes from our loyal listener, Tarek. Hey guys, I love the show and have been listening since I discovered it 5 episodes in. I binged it one night and managed to keep up. My question is, how the hell do I get PR companies to answer me? My band has been around for 5 years, has several releases, done some light touring up and down the East Coast, made 3 professional videos, pressed our own albums in vinyl, and basically established ourselves. This is incredibly frustrating because we're 100% willing to pay. I'm just having trouble with figuring out why our money isn't wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at a loss on this one. It's like PR people. I mean, I guess unless there's just something that we're not seeing here, right? You may have done all these things, but there's something either grossly offensive about your band. There's something that just is absolutely unmarketable. They feel that even though, you know, you're paying them, you know, PR people want to deliver. They're not just here to take your money. The good companies that Blasco and I have worked with throughout our careers, you know, even though you are paying them up front, they want to make sure that they can deliver for you, right? I mean, no matter how much you're being paid, there's nothing, you know, satisfactory about taking someone's money unless you're just a complete asshole. So The only other thing I can say is, you know, go back to episode 65 where we talked about so many of the things on how to pitch to labels. Same thing can apply to PR companies. Do you know anybody who's worked with them? You know, how do you get that personal introduction? You know, who knows? Your email might be going to their spam folders. Have you tried calling them? Right? You know, I'm not, yeah. You know, Blasco and I aren't big fans of saying go troll them on socials, but, you know, look and see if you can find somebody on Facebook and send them a messenger, you know, thing. I don't like to do business that way, but people have found me there, and I just politely say, you know, if I'm interested in the opportunity, find me at mike@outerloopmanagement.com. Like, those would be my recommendations. What's your take, Blasco?
I would just suggest, have you tried Adrenaline PR? Because potentially they would be more than happy to take your money. So maybe he's just, you know, looking around the wrong corners, or, you know, looking under the wrong rocks. I would suggest them. That's my best suggestion. Just keep on trying. Eventually you should find somebody, but like Mike says, they do want to deliver. And, so potentially it just hasn't been a good fit. Maybe the people that you're hitting up are overwhelmed with the clients that they do have. You know, they don't want to take away from their bigger client. So it potentially, you just got to keep looking, because you just haven't found the right fit yet. But I'm confident that you'll eventually find someone that would be happy to take your money.
Yep.
Question number three comes from our loyal listener, Eddie. I am a regular listener of the Managemental podcast. I think it's great you're so open to listener questions like this. You guys have a good thing going, so keep up the great work. I work with a newer band. I am a manager of sorts. I have been working with the guys on improving the band's branding and marketing. A big part of the update we need is a more professional-looking band logo, one that fits with what we are trying to accomplish. We have already been through multiple rounds of sketches with two different artists, and we have not seen anything in line with what we are looking for. Both artists have great portfolios of band logos. For both artists, we have started out by giving them creative freedom and eventually progressed to giving them a lot of specific instruction. It almost seemed that the result got worse. So I'm wondering if you guys have any suggestions on communicating with graphic artists, how to convey what we are looking for in a band logo.
Yeah, this is a really interesting question. Thanks, Eddie. I guess there's a few things I can say. One is, to directly answer the question on communication, everybody's got different processes. I think it is helpful for whatever you're asking for to really try to get a very clear idea and gauge, and try to give as much specific information as possible. You know, fortunately here at Outer Loop and Jabberjaw, I'm a fantastic designer who's worked hand in hand with me for 7+ years. But even this year, I had to go back and refine how I communicated with him. One of the reasons is because he's so busy. And the other reason is I found I was wasting a lot of his time, right? I would say, hey, I need a logo. And then he'd give him that creative freedom. He'd come to you and you'd be like, no, that isn't it. And he's like, well, what do you mean it isn't it? And then I'd go and give him specific information. And thankfully, it didn't get worse, but it didn't get to the point that we needed it to be. And so I found, and maybe I'll look at what our little guidelines are of how we do our internal graphic requests and throw those in our show notes. I don't have it in front of me, but I mean, it's tough. I do think being very specific about what you want. Okay, you say that you want a professional looking band logo. I'm guessing it's within at least metal or underground. So find some comparisons. You know, it's sort of like a producer. You know, you go look at the back of a record, or at this point, you'd go and look on Wikipedia, who produced that record? Okay, well, was it the producer that really gave it that special sauce, or was it the band who came in with these amazing ideas and that allowed the producer's talents to shine? So same thing here. If you have a great idea for what you want, maybe the designer can execute. If you're giving them free rein, they may be actually creating something great. You might not just like it. There's a lot of subjectivity in this great thing we call art. And so I empathize with you, but I think I'll give you some guidelines for that communication. What's your take, Blasco? You're heavily involved in branding.
Yeah, my best result always, and I should say my best result and most efficient result comes from whenever I communicate a very specific idea, right? Like, I specifically am looking for this. Here are examples, right? Here's the color palette. Here's the style I'm looking for, right? Whenever I do that, I get something turned around that requires minimal edits, if usually, and sometimes just none. Also, working and a lot of times too, I'll work with an artist that I really trust his aesthetic to where I don't have to give him that specific of a detail, and more often than not, he really kind of turns around some really great results just because I know that I'm going to him for a specific thing that he specializes in, that he does really well. So I can kind of be a little looser on those because I know that he does this one thing. But I have encountered frustrations with these guys sometimes, man. And Mike, you probably have too, where you send them what you want. You get back your first draft, right? And you're like, okay, this is perfect. Just change this one little thing. And I don't know what it is about the graphic artist where a lot of times they just can't help themselves. They send it back, they change the one thing, but then they change a bunch of other shit. And I'm like, no, man, like you didn't have to change the other stuff. And then you have to go back and like revise. And like it sometimes these things spiral out of control, even though it's like at an unnecessary level. And but I've encountered that so many times that now I just have to just think it's funny.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, you know, I'm a process guy. And so sometimes I don't know what I want until I've seen kind of the first draft. And then I can say, oh, okay, change this, change that color, do this, do that, move this here, move this there. You know, so much of it, again, is going to be part of that process. I'm very fortunate. You know, my designer is incredibly patient with me because he knows that I obsess about, you know, very OCD things sometimes. And yeah, I mean, part of it is finding the right person. I've got a handful of other guys and, you know, Eddie, we can give you some recommendations on great guys. It sounds like you're already sort of down the rabbit hole with two of them. One thing that isn't mentioned here, but I would recommend is being very clear, about what the expectations are with the designer. Okay. What do you want out of it, right? A logo. All right. What for the price that you're paying, how many revisions do you get? What if you're not satisfied? You know, there's typically something called a kill fee, which, you know, can run in the neighborhood of 50% of what the logo quote is. So, again, if you're going to be charged $500 for a logo, person goes through it. You know, you've chosen them based on hopefully their portfolio. So if they and you can't see eye to eye, I mean, you shouldn't pay full price necessarily, unless that's their arrangement, but you should plan to pay them something. Again, it's subjective. You know, your preference or your acceptance of what they've created is based on your personal opinion. It's not based on something factual. If you've gone in and asked them to create a logo and they've done that, you should respect their time in doing so.
Yep. Question number four comes from our loyal listener, Romaine. Love the Managemental Podcast. I was wondering if you could dig into the subject of studio bands, bands that only record music but don't play live shows. I am currently starting a band like that, and I'm working to find ways to make it as interesting as a regular band. I was wondering if you and Mike had any experience with a band like that, and if you had any advice for artists that won't do live shows regarding promotion or ways to keep feeding fans some content in between albums.
It's an interesting question. I don't do a ton with quote-unquote studio bands, though there are plenty of artists that I'm sure we both worked with that have had side projects that, you know, don't get the attention and might not ever play live. I mean, I don't think, you know, obviously playing out and playing live gives you an entire other arm of ways and reasons to promote. As you're promoting and pushing a tour and individual shows and, of course, capturing live photos and live footage. But that doesn't, I mean, you know, there's 360 degrees of how to promote. You know, that's maybe a quarter of it at best. Doesn't mean that you can't do the other 270 degrees and do it really well and find other ways to supplement that will prevent you from promoting. I mean, I say great content done consistently over time. I don't say great content, you know, that has to include live stuff. Keep your content interesting, engaging, professional, and great. And to me, there's no real difference here. What about you?
As a fan, some of my favorite music has been studio projects. There was a studio project called Lard. I don't know if you remember this. It was
I remember that.
It was the Ministry Guys and Jello Biafra. There was a project called Egghead that was Ian MacKay and I believe also the Ministry Guys.
Wait, it's not Egghead. It's Egg Hunt.
Egg Hunt.
Because correct. I was just thinking about this after Easter, and how I'd completely blown an opportunity. But don't worry, there's always next Easter, Ian MacKay, if you're listening. I'm gonna get you, sucker.
and there was a side project from Henry Rollins and his bass player called Wartime.
I've never even heard that.
Yeah, and I think that there's a bunch more that I'm missing.
Oh yeah, millions, right?
I actually had a studio project with some buddies of mine called the Death Riders. And that was like a sort of like a, you know, Cramps meets, you know, Dick Dale. It was like sort of like this horror surf thing or whatever.
Is that up on streaming services anywhere?
It is not.
Need to get that one up there, bro. Come on.
Yeah. and I also do work with a studio project that's kind of like a super group-ish, you know, it's people from other bands. They have a studio project. I like studio projects. I from a fan perspective, from a musician perspective, and also, you know, from an artist perspective, like I like it. Now, if the question is how do you keep people entertained because you're not going to be promoting shows, you're not going to be promoting tours. So, I feel like you just have to do a lot of content. The band that I have worked with from a managerial side is made a lot of videos. Like, you know, they made a record. They did sort of a vinyl only as well as digital, you know, streaming services. That's how they released their record. They had some cool pre-order packages, but they made a lot of videos. They within the budget, we carved out a lot for videos, but the guy who was very savvy in pulling together favors, and we made, you know, I think like 7 or 8 videos, you know, music videos and stuff. And we continually put out those. So I think, you know, a video component, you know, the beauty is that we have so much access to stuff now to where you don't need a lot of money to make videos and promote content. Like you just gotta make it. So hopefully someone in your project is savvy in the graphic, you know, digital marketplace video, you know, that you, hopefully that you have that asset internally to where you can make a lot of that stuff. That was the fortunate part of this project that I work with is that, you know, one of the guys was like very savvy in creating content. So there was a wealth of it. But, you know, that would be my suggestion.
Yeah, all great suggestions. And, you know, I mean, one of the challenging things is obviously most of the side projects that, you know, in studio only projects you mentioned come with a bit of a platform already. Talking about guys in Ministry, talking about Ian MacKay, Henry Rollins, talking about Blasco. But again, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, that is an advantage, but it shouldn't mean that you don't still have the resources to promote it. If it's great music and you've got great content and you figure out ways to engage, it might take time for it to really catch on, but there's no reason that you can't make an impact by, you know, listening to all of the tactics that we've talked about in previous episodes.
Yep. The last question, number five, comes from our loyal listener, Jeff. Just thought a lot of your listeners probably don't know what specific people make up the quote-unquote team. For example, a lawyer, booking agent, manager, etc. And maybe discuss what each one does and the importance of each and order in which you should find them.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Jeff. I feel like, you know, we do cover this more or less, and I know in my Outer Loop coaching platform, and we have a music management primer, i.e. an ebook that you can get just by going to outerloopcoaching.com. We cover this relatively extensively. That said, I don't know if we specifically mention what order to find them. You know, and that is a good question. I always say you need to find them in the order of what you need at any given time, right? So obviously Belasco and I are managers. I'm a huge fan of finding a manager first, if that's what makes sense for your band, right? Belasco and I will both tell you, if you've got any paperwork in front of you, including that from a management company, you need an attorney, right? So maybe an attorney is the first person you find. Hey, maybe you're lucky enough where the record label finds you, wants to put some music out, puts a contract in front of you, make sure you've got an attorney that reviews that. You know, booking agent could come first. You've just got music out on your own. You're doing it DIY. Booking agent wants to help you. There is no, you know, hopefully Blasco won't get mad at me here, but there's multiple ways to skin a cat, ladies and gentlemen. Even if it's just whatever. I think I'm not even going to go there. To me, it really just matters that you're making educated choices based on, you know, where your band is or where, you know, if you're in charge, you know, whoever else is going to add value to the team at any given time. What would you say, Blasco?
No situation from my experience has ever fallen into some formula, nor would I suggest one. I think that from my experience, every situation has been different. The first member of the team is always different. But fortunately, that first member of the team leads to the other members of the team, like you said, when appropriate, right? So if a client that I have first had an attorney pick them up, right? And then from there, they got a booking agent because that was necessary. And then the booking agent introduced them to me, who then became the manager, right? And then I built the rest of the team around that. And I was still working with that attorney, right? Still in some respects working with the booking agent. Like, these people are still all around. Now, I've had different experiences where those initial people are long gone and I've replaced them because it was necessary, because the band grew above those initial people's skill level, right? And you've seen, you know, there's just no rhyme or reason to how it is. A team is obviously important when it's important, and how that team comes to surround itself around the artist is always different. So there's no real correct formulaic answer here. It all just happens. But I would think that as a suggestion, if you're a band and whatever that first team member is, to make sure that you are very engaged with them and that you are relying on them to help you initially kind of build your team, right? Like, I mean, I think one of my bands that got signed, we got signed, and then the A&R person introduced us to our attorney, introduced us to our manager, and we built a team that way, right? So, but that was because we were engaged with our A&R person, and he understand that these people have relationships and they like working with certain people. So it's good to say, hey man, who else can you introduce us to, and rely on them to help start to build your team that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for you and I, 20 plus years in the biz, to now say, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, blah, 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 because we know once we're on board, a team is going to eventually fall in place. Now, that said, you know, I spend a lot of time in the developing artist sphere, and it takes, you know, still efforts for me to get agents on board and certain members on board. And I do it in a very, strategic manner. But you're right. I mean, ultimately, to me, I think the one mistake people make, and I understand why you make it, you know, there's so much to wanting validation. Hey, mom. Hey, girlfriend. Hey, wife. Hey, insert person that you want to prove that all of these hours that you're spending doing this stuff is worth something. This, you know, insert here, manager, label, attorney, booking agent, you know, PR person, whatever, has vouched for me. They're giving me the cosign on my, you know, my efforts. And I've watched a lot of artists make mistakes that way. You know, if they were just a little bit more patient or really vetted the person who was coming at them and waited, you know, as much as if there's no one right way to build a team, there is very much a right way to, all right, we got to think about how I say this, but there's value in ensuring, and of course, nothing's a given, but ask around, you know, hey, this manager wants to pick us up, or this management company. Are they doing well by you guys? And if they are, you know, and you get some recommendations, but don't just jump because somebody came knocking, no matter what the position is. If Mike Mowry or Blasco comes knocking on your door, look, we're sitting here espousing a lot of wisdom. Doesn't mean that we're the right fit for every single artist. You need to ask around. You need to get recommendations and ensure that you're making the right decisions based on what you need at any given time and whether or not that person's going to add the value. Remember, you got to pay these people. You know, our services are not free and we're damn good at what we do, but, you know, the shoe doesn't always fit for any of us in this crazy world called the music business.
Well, that concludes episode 66. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back here next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Blasco1313. We encourage you to email us any questions or comments you may have for the podcast to me directly at askblasco@gmail.com. If you have listened this far, much respect to you for making efforts to educate yourselves and taking your future into your own hands. Mike, what are your final parting thoughts?
Man, this was a fun one. Let's not wait till we throw another six on the board before we do this again. To all of our loyal listeners out there in loyal listener land, thank you for continuing to support us. We really do appreciate it. We love hearing from you. We love hearing that, you know, we've been able to make some sort of impact in your lives. In addition to writing in, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to this. Share it with your friends, your families, your loved ones, other aspiring artists. Blasco and I do this for the love of what we do. You know, so thank you very much for that. If you're interested in taking your career a little bit further with very specific information, OuterLoopCoaching.com is my platform. As mentioned, we have our music management primer. We've got courses called Release It Right, Connected, and so many others. It's really a fun way to take the information that we're providing here and move it in a much more specific manner. So do yourself a favor and check that out. Last but not least, find me on Twitter and Instagram at MikeOloop. And last but not least, Rockabilia.com is your place for merchandise. They support us, so please support them whenever you need some threads. PC Jabberjaw is 15% off. Blasco, because people will listen to this after the fact, it was great seeing you this weekend, bro.
Yes.
hopefully all of that happens and that part right there actually works out. You know, we'll post a picture of you and I together if indeed it happens.
There you go. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Mm.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.